Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me and my guest, Anne Cuthbert, tonight as we talk about the 9 doable steps to break your emotional eating habits. I recently had the great pleasure of getting to know Anne while attending a conference and was immediately struck by her warmth and openness, which I know she brings to the amazing work she does with her clients. As some of you may know, I work with survivors of childhood sexual abuse who are beyond sick and tired of feeling broken and unfixable, and I help them let go of the pain of abuse and feel normal. As Anne and I talked about our clients, I shared how many of my clients are struggling with their weight, and I often find that my clients, once we've processed the unresolved trauma, are in need of support to go further in this particular area, so I immediately knew that I had to share her work with my community. So tonight, I'll start off by telling you a little bit about Anne, and then she will share with us how she got started working with people who struggle with disordered eating and body image. Then we'll jump right in to Anne's 9 steps that help people, and helped her, break out of the cycle of emotional eating and learn to love their bodies and themselves. Now, Anne knows firsthand what it is like to deal with food and body issues. For years, she struggled with food issues and hating her body. She compared herself to every woman she saw and resisted exercising, refusing to give in to what other people told her she should do and how she should look. She ate to hide how she was feeling and to avoid being close to anyone. She thought she couldn't be loved if she was fat. 14 years later, she no longer uses food to cope. She feels good about herself, her body, and her life, and is passionate about helping others recover as well. Along with her personal and professional experience with eating disorders, she is licensed as a marriage and family therapist in California and a licensed professional counselor in Oregon. She holds a master's degree in counseling psychology from Antioch University, Santa Barbara, and you can learn more about her at foodisnottheenemy.com. Anne, thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you, Rachel. I'm so glad to be here, and welcome everyone. I'm really excited to be talking about this tonight.
Yes. So to get us started, could you share a little bit about how you got started working with people who with disordered eating and body image?
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to. As you were kind of reading my bio, my history, I'm sitting here nodding because it's so true, all of that. I compared myself. That was really the most painful thing for me. I compared myself to every woman, and I just felt bad about myself. Or, you know, every once in a while I'd be like, well, at least I look better than her. You know, it's like my whole self-esteem was based on this. And I worried about everything I ate and felt bad for eating Snickers, felt bad for not exercising enough, and just it was really painful. But for a long time, I didn't even know that. I had no idea how much it was really hurting me and taking away from my life until one day I really got it. It was like I was comparing myself yet again to someone, you know, walking in front of me. And I just thought, wow, her life must be so great because of the way she looks and how great her hair was and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, it was just like, oh, my gosh, what am I doing to myself? And so that's when I got this needed to change and wanted it to change, kind of knew that it had to and it would. And so that's when I really started working on it. And not just my relationship with food, but I started working on myself. And started working on all of my issues from childhood that left me feeling so unworthy and unlovable. Mm. And it's made a huge, huge difference in my life. So I've always been interested in eating disorders, always, since I was a kid. Anytime I could, I would write a paper on it. And it just drew my attention, and I never really knew why. I always knew I wanted to be a counselor, so it kind of, the two came together easily for me. It's like, okay, I'm going to work with eating disorders. But at the time, there's not a lot of information about eating disorders. I kind of knew it existed, right. But I didn't feel like everybody was inflicted by it. Now, of course, I believe most people are and probably were, just like me. So it wasn't very difficult to put the two together. I worked on my issues around it, And I feel so much compassion for women who struggle and knowing that they don't need to struggle and knowing how much it takes away from how they feel about themselves. And our culture, of course, is so focused on dieting and losing weight mm-hmm. and who you are is not good enough that I'm really passionate about helping feel differently about themselves, to really accept their bodies, to love themselves, and from the inside out, from a place of deep within, and then having their who they really are shine. So that's
my love. I love that, and I think that's certainly something that many of us can relate to, is the constant comparison trap that we fall into, and looking at our body shape and even how, you know, our hair color or the color of our eyes, our skin tone, all the way yeah. down to those things, comparing ourselves and then taking that to determine our own worth and our own value, whether we're meeting the mark or not.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Do you think, would you characterize your journey as, you know, kind of struggling with an eating disorder? Did you ever identify as having a particular, you know, one of the commonly named eating disorders?
You know, that's a great question, and I really appreciate it because a lot of my clients don't necessarily do that, and yet they're struggling, you know, with feeling guilty about what they eat or hating how they look and comparing, which are all disordered eating or eating disorder behaviors, things that we do. So that does fall in the category. But you're right. There's mostly when I talk to people and I tell them what I do, I work with eating disorders, they think anorexia or bulimia.
Yeah.
And most women are not anorexic or bulimic. And most of the women I work with are not anorexic or bulimic, but are struggling somewhere on the continuum between, you know, compulsively overeating all the time and not having any kind of punishing way of getting rid of that, and someone anorexic. I mean, this culture, it's hard to escape that.
Mm-hmm.
So most women do that. But for myself, I was very aware of my, especially when I was younger, of my, I wanted so badly to just starve myself. It felt like if I could just do that, everything would be okay.
Mm.
And so I can definitely identify that. And I didn't. One reason was because whenever I got too hungry, I would feel sick. So uh-huh. I couldn't do that. And I was bummed about that, really. But also there's a voice. It's kind of like this small voice in my head that said, don't do it, Anne. Don't do that, because if you do that, you'll just end up with more problems than you already mm-hmm. have.
Mm.
And I really owe a lot to that voice. I don't know where it came from or why it was there, but it knew that that was not going to be my solution.
Mm. Has it been that same inner voice that's guided you to this new place where you are, you know, really accepting and you feel comfortable and you are no longer kind of burdened and constantly struggling around food and feeling good about yourself?
Yeah, I would say so for sure. That's my healthy voice, and I think everybody has one, mm-hmm. that healthy voice that says, you know, that's not healthy, don't do that. It's just small, you know, so my healthy voice is louder now.
Yeah.
And it's bigger, and so it can interfere when I am thinking, oh, you know, someone might not like me because of my body shape, then that healthy voice, like, oh, no, that's so not true. You're just awesome, no matter what your body shape. So
awesome. I love that. Yeah. That inner goddess voice that just says, oh, man, that's their loss anyway if they don't like what's happening over here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you work with women, and surely we know that women are being confronted quite often with images and expectations about how they should look, how they should behave. Do you find that men are impacted by this problem as well?
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. I'd say women, because mostly women are, and as everyone can imagine, and your own experience, and just listening to other women talk about what diet they're doing and how badly they they hate their body and I'm fat and things like that. You know, it's really pervasive with women, but it is men, it's getting worse for men too, unfortunately. So I have worked with some men on this, and they've been helped by it. I think it will continue to go in that direction as well. It's just too hard to escape the message of our culture, and it's just mostly it's with women. You know, men still, you know, it's kind of okay to have to be fat as a man, but less and less. More so, mm-hmm. They're getting the discrimination, the criticism as much.
Got it. Yeah. Okay, good. And so as you were, you know, you had this moment when you're walking down the street and are saying, oh, yet again, here I am, comparing myself, making myself feel low and worthless by looking at the external world and judging myself as a result. And you said that, you know, that was it. I knew at that moment that it was time to do something different. So how did you start making that transition and making that change for yourself?
For me, the first, what ended up happening for me is I found a friend, a mentor, who just happened to work with eating disorders. And that wasn't significant at the time. What was is I started on a journey of personal growth. Mm-hmm. And we did workshops, and I got a lot of healing from that, just around, you know, my self-esteem and childhood trauma and things. And then one day her eating disorder specialist self came forward and told me, you know, I think you should do this one step. And I'm going to talk about that step later in a moment. And she said, I think you should do this, and I think it'll be really helpful. And that changed everything. I was terrified to do it. It took a couple of weeks before I finally was like, okay, I'm going to do this, because it was really scary. And I'll, again, talk more about that and how it works with those steps I'm going to talk about tonight. But once I committed to doing it, everything changed. It was really miraculous. And that paired with the personal growth work that I was doing, really, that was huge toward learning more about myself, as well as just freeing myself from this obsession with food. And it's through that process that I created these steps to work together with healing a relationship with food, but also healing what's going on underneath that.
Yeah, and you know that when we were talking, that piece is what really spoke to me so much. That you have really tapped into that it's not about just the food, it's not about just the diet or just about the exercise. It's about what's really going on that's driving those behaviors. And when we start to look at those, we can really begin to see the shifts and changes that we want.
Yes.
So let's not keep them waiting. Let's get into it. I know everyone's wondering, what are these 9 steps? So tell us the first one.
Yes, I'm so excited to do this. All of these steps, it's really great information. These steps really work. I'm going to go through them one by one. But keep in mind that this is not about doing them all at once. This really is one step at a time. And before I get started, I just want to let everybody know I have a little bit of a cough. I don't think I've coughed yet, which is amazing, but if you hear a little cough here and there through this talk, then hopefully it won't be too disruptive. So what I'd love to have everybody do is, if it's available to you, to grab a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil, and it'd be hard, take too long to do it on a computer, so if you've got paper and pencil or pen, that would be great. And on this paper, turn it lengthwise so it's, you know, long, long way. And just draw a line in the middle of the paper. And then write the numbers 1 through 9 on this line. So this is the kind of continuum, or actually path, if you will. And so what I invite you to do is, each step that I talk about, write that step on, you know, the line number 1 and what that is, and any notes that you want to write about it. And then start to see this is your path, your journey. And there's not a destination at the end. You know, you don't get step 9 and then suddenly you know, your life is great, although that could happen. I'm totally open for that. And there'll be huge transitions, each of these steps will. But the journey of life is always going. You know, we're always learning about ourselves, and we're always growing. And that's how I see this, your relationship with food. It's a way to help you understand yourself and learn more about yourself. So this is your journey one step at a time.
I love that.
So, yeah. So the first step is, and this really is the first step. Some of the other ones you can mix and, you know, change around. But the very first step really is to eat what you want. So to let go of diet mentality. There's no such thing as good food. There's no such thing as bad food or healthy or unhealthy. It's about undoing all the things that dieting has done. So dieting teaches you not to trust yourself. Dieting tells you what you're supposed, what to eat based on what? The fact that you're supposed to look a certain way, the fact that someone says, oh, this is good for you. You know, and all these beliefs and, you know, pseudo facts that have nothing to do with you or your body. So eating what you want undoes all of that. It's also the step that helps the most with getting rid of the binging. So this is how it works. You go on your first diet, and it's not that big a deal. You know, you restrict foods. I'm not going to eat that. That's bad for me. And it may work fine. It's your first diet. There's, you know, you lose some weight, people comment, feels great. But then you go to a party, and at this party are the chips and the cake and all those goodies that you've said are bad and you have restricted. But you want those foods, right? I mean, they're tasty, they're good. You haven't had them in a while. And so the binge part of you starts to develop. And this is only one diet. Imagine 10 diets, 100 diets later, which some of you may have done. And that binge part of you is now huge. In fact, it may be that every time you even think about dieting, that binge voice goes, oh, no, it's like the Last Supper. It has to eat as much as possible to prevent. It's really rebel against this restriction in this diet. So eating what you want is about giving that binge part of you what it wants, which is food. It really is just food. And what happens, and it may feel like magic, actually, because my guess is a lot of you, if you guys feel this binge part of you, it feels completely out of control.
Yeah.
So what happens when you feed it, when you give it what it wants, it calms down. Right now, it doesn't trust you. It says, you know, when you say, okay, I'm going to eat what I want, so right now I really want a piece of cake. And the bitch part of you says, oh, goody, I get to have cake, and I'm going to eat it, and I'm going to eat a lot of it, and because I know you're going to take it away from me any moment, and or tomorrow you're not going to let me have it. And so it eats more and more because it doesn't trust you. So if tomorrow it says, I want chocolate cake, and you say, okay, you can have it. And the next day, I want chocolate cake. Okay, you can have it, no problem. Then that binge part starts to trust you again and starts to say, well, okay, I can have it. And you really mean it because I've been eating it now for 4 days straight and even twice yesterday. So, all right, well, then suddenly what happens is the chocolate cake could be sitting right there and you think, no, I don't really want it right now. I know I can have it later if I want it. So I'm not going to eat it right now.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like this has a lot to do with coming to understand your choice in the matter.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You get to have a choice. Doing this step takes away that rebellion so that you really can have a choice in the matter. There's no more feeling of being out of control or that binge voice, which is very strong, kind of controlling things.
Mm. Now, what happens if I say, okay, I want cake, and I'm going to have cake, and I go and get that, and then the next day I have cake, and then before I know it, I've gained, you know, 10 pounds. How do you balance that? How does that play a part in it when you're wanting to kind of manage your weight but also wanting to give yourself this freedom to choose?
Yeah. That's a great question, because the answer to that is all about the emotions, which is the next piece. And all these steps are really about, it's not about food, which we already talked about. So from that perspective, eating what you want will absolutely bring up the emotion of fear.
Mm.
And the fear, it is, what if I gain weight? And this is across the board, as you can imagine, and everyone listening probably is feeling that, oh my gosh, if I do that, I'm going to gain a bunch of weight. And so what that fear is, if you just kind of take a look at it and breathe into it, what if you do gain weight? What might happen? And let's use you as an example, Rachel. What would happen if you did gain weight? What might happen?
Sure. Well, I might just not want to be seen. I might feel really bad about the way I look and maybe mm-hmm. not want to be intimate with my partner, or I might feel really uncomfortable in my clothes and mm-hmm. Maybe don't want to go out as much and won't be as social because I just feel like I don't fit, like I'm too big.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. So what that translates into is fat equals you're not good enough.
Mm.
You're not lovable. You're not worthy.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that's the connection. That's what, and in our culture it makes sense, that's what we're told.
Mm-hmm.
If you're fat, that's bad. Not good enough. You need to lose weight. It's a fitting in thing. So that's what it translates to. So when you start to have that fear, which is very natural, then you have the opportunity to go to the place of, okay, this isn't about gaining weight. This is about not feeling worthy. And I guarantee that connects to a place of probably of childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Either you were taught that directly or indirectly, or the trauma that you've been through, brings up that feeling. So it's a great way to be able to experience that feeling and heal it rather than running away from it by trying to stay thin.
Got it. Okay, interesting. Now, you said that the next step is kind of plays a part in helping with that fear a little bit. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. And also before I do, I just want to let everybody know, you may gain a little weight by doing this step. Stick with it. Work on the fear. Your body will go back. And all the other steps are kind of about, they're not the free-for-all. So that first step is really important because it, kind of helps you get back into the middle ground, so you're not restricting and binging. It helps you get into that middle ground. And then the others are healthy ways of implementing, kind of the boundaries and self-care into it.
Okay.
And then your weight will, your body likes to stay a certain weight. So even if you gain some, you're much more likely to then go back. And I hear about that all the time. And you may not even necessarily gain weight at all. It just depends on a lot of factors. So I want to say that.
Okay.
So yes. Step two is, when you've let go of diet mentality and you're doing really great with that step and it feels easy, and it doesn't have to be 100%, but enough, then you're ready to move on to the next step, and that's to eat when you're hungry and stop when you're full. And I hear a lot from my clients that portion control is the problem. They don't even know how to feed their bodies. A lot of my clients don't even know when they're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
They're out of touch with their body. They just have no way of really connecting in with that. Plus, there's a lot of emotional stuff. So hunger feels like emptiness, and emotional emptiness needs to be avoided. So eating is a way just to keep filling a hole or a void or an emptiness. So that's often what's happening on an emotional level. And so paying attention to that and facing that emptiness feeling by letting yourself get hungry, and I don't mean starving at all, just where you're starting to feel hunger. Plus, what people realize is they will survive. You will survive being hungry, I promise. I remember when I first realized that, I'm like, I'm hungry, and it's okay.
Right.
I'm okay.
Now, are you talking about hungry at the point where, like, your stomach is doing its little rumbly growly thing? Is that the cue that you're looking for to tell you?
That is one of them, and it's very different for different people. For me, my first clue that I'm hungry is I start yawning. I get really tired.
Oh.
And it's before my stomach growls, and I'm like, God, why am I so tired? Oh, well, it's been 5 hours since I ate, so that's probably why. And that's why what I suggest with this step is to create a hunger scale. And you can look this up on the Internet. They're all over the place. But it's basically a scale from 1 to 10, and 10 being you're so stuffed you can't even move, and 1 being you can't even lift your arm because you're so tired and out of energy, you're starving. And the goal is to eat at about a 3, maybe a 4, and then just stop at around a 7. And so you can see that as you do this, it's about, you know, okay, checking in with my body, where am I on this hunger scale, and learning about it. First, you probably won't know, but kind of playing with it, let yourself get a little more hungry than you normally would. How does that feel? Let yourself stop before getting too full, and how does that feel? And a lot of times, whatever you're feeling will be that underlying emotional emptiness, or, you know, fear of feeling that emptiness. It's just very common.
Is this also where the kind of eating out of boredom comes in? Like, I'm not really even hungry, but I'm just, this is my pattern, this is my habit, or this is the time of day when I'm supposed to eat, or those sorts of things?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Checking in with your hunger. Okay, I'm not really hungry, so what might be going on? And since you mentioned boredom, I hear that a lot. And what I would suggest is it's actually the feeling of loneliness.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. And then also, some people might actually wait too long to eat. And emotionally, that's kind of a feeling of, see, I'm in control. I've got my life handled. I don't have to eat when I'm hungry. I can ignore my body. And so that's also problematic. So that person, it would be important to eat sooner than you normally would, and then that's what's going to trigger underlying feelings.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I think this is really interesting, the getting in touch, you know, first of all, getting in touch with your choice, you know, and figuring out when, you know, one thing that you said was doing that first until you feel at ease about it. And I found that really interesting because I found myself going, well, how do I know when I'm at ease? So I'm imagining that it has something to do with, like, that anxiety and that voice that kind of is constantly in the background, gets quiet, and then really starting to pay attention to what your body wants to choose and what it needs.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, great. And you will start craving vegetables, I promise.
Yeah, okay.
absolutely. That's, you know, the shift has happened when you turn down foods that you normally would not, you know, or that binge part of you doesn't want. So you say, yeah, I don't really want that cake. And you say, what I really want is some broccoli.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice. And people are amazed, just like you were. But it absolutely happens because our bodies do want nutrients that they want them, and they will send you signals. You will crave things that your body needs. We just need to give the binge part what it wants so it calms down,
okay,
so that you can then listen to it.
Great. I love that. I love it so far. I'm really excited about this. So now, is that it for step two, or is there more that you want to say about that?
I think that's it for step two, and if you don't have any questions, then, and everybody, we're going to try to get to a Q&A at the end, so if you've got questions, write them down, and we'll address them later, that hopefully Rachel's thinking of a lot, so I don't forget anything along the way.
Good. So now, just as a reminder, as people are listening and you're going through these, they're supposed to be writing down kind of what's happening for them now and what they imagine they'd like to be doing or experiencing in that area.
Just write down, so under number one on your paper, write down, you know, eat what you want, and number two, eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full, and then just any notes that you want to have for yourself so that you can kind of look at your journey and see, you know, maybe you'll write down the fear that you were feeling about possibly gaining weight and what that might really be about, so anything that would be helpful for you to understand yourself a little bit more.
Perfect. All right, step three.
So step three is to eat without distractions. And this can bring up a lot of stuff for people. So let me tell you the how-to of it, and it's pretty much as it sounds. You know, just to eat mindfully, to pay attention to what you're eating. Let the book wait for later. Don't watch TV or work, anything. No distractions at all. Just sit, and even at the table, and some of my clients have set up, you know, candles and really treated themselves to a meal that's about them. So it's about you and enjoying the food. You know, if you're going to eat what you want and eat what your body says, hey, this sounds delicious, then it's really important to enjoy every bite.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, sometimes you'll find you're not liking it. And then it's like, you know, I don't want to eat this. This doesn't taste good. And so you're honoring what you want and getting that. So that, it's a self-care thing. It's putting yourself first. I'll try to be brief about this funny story, but I was at a restaurant, and I was trying to choose between two items, and I asked the waitress, which one's better? And she said, oh, don't get that one. That one's terrible. Nobody likes it. Well, it is the one I wanted. My body was saying, that's the one I want. So I ordered it anyway, and she was right. It was terrible. No, it's why didn't even have this on the menu? But I asked for something else. I said, you're right, this is terrible. I don't want it. Can I have that other thing? And they did. And it was hard. You know, I just say, hey, I'm worth eating what I want and what tastes good.
Mm-hmm.
And then she honored that and didn't even complain about it. So it's really important to eat what you want. People who overeat will eat things that they don't even like.
Hmm.
So the other important aspect to this is about, you know, well, how many of you, and you can't really answer because you're on mute, but just notice, have you ever eaten food and then after eating kind of felt totally unsatisfied and you start looking for something else? I want something else. Or,
yeah.
You know, there's even a feeling of, did I even eat? You don't even really remember eating. And that's because of this step. When you're watching TV or reading, you're not paying attention to what you're eating. And so in a way, your body is like, I never got anything. I never got the satisfaction. And food is delicious. So it's important that we feel satisfied by it. And emotionally as well. There's nothing wrong with being emotionally satisfied by food. So when you eat without distractions, you get to have the food. Your body gets to have it. And that's where it helps you to feel satisfied and not want to just keep eating.
Keep going. Well, I have to say, and this would be a tough one for me. I think I'm going to get stuck at step three for a while. Because I love, like, sitting down for a good movie with my dinner and, you know, watching the show and eating my meal. Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yes. And I would guess for you and anybody else who's feeling the same way, that it comes down to loneliness.
Hmm. Wanting to have something around so it's not just...
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. As well as, you know, any beliefs that you have about, you know, yourself. You know, when we don't spend a lot of time just with ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, or just sitting and doing nothing. But doing nothing and being with ourselves is how we learn how we feel or those feelings start to surface.
Mm-hmm. I think for me too, like I really grew up that way. I really grew up like family sitting in front of the TV eating dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways it's a little bit, like that's how I remember being a part of a family or being connected.
Yeah.
So it's one of those bad habits, right, that I'm going to get the opportunity to challenge now and really take on. Seeing how it's different for me if I do something different,
Absolutely. And I imagine, you may not know it, but I imagine you felt lonely as a kid in that situation.
And you're good. Look at you being good.
Doing this, I had a client who did this, and she really felt that loneliness, but she sat at the table with her dinner, you know, night after night, and felt the loneliness, and it didn't take too long before it really started to lessen a lot. Because when you feel your feelings, they get relief. That's all they want, is to be noticed and recognized and felt. And so it totally changed that for her. She felt less lonely, more connected, and satisfied, too, with her food.
I like that. So, yeah, and again, just noticing that anytime you're resisting or you have one of these habits where you're either, you know, judging food as good or bad, or you're mm-hmm. eating when you're not hungry, or eating way past the point when you're full, or you're constantly eating and doing something else, that to notice what that behavior is helping you avoid feeling mm-hmm. or dealing with. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. Right. Yeah, and these are all about paying attention to your body and what's happening there. You know, you're practicing by doing it with, am I hungry or not? But your emotions are all in your body too. So by doing that, you're practicing connecting with your body and what your body has to tell you about how you feel, as well as whether or not you're hungry.
Yeah, I like it. All right, so, step four.
So step four is to put on your plate only what you'll eat. And so what this is about is you're preparing food, and, you know, if you're single like me, then you just prepare as much as you're going to eat. And if you're in a family situation or with more people, then, you know, the food's out there, and you check in with your body. How hungry am I? You know, just all the things we've talked about. How hungry am I? How much do I need right now? How much does my body need right now? And serving up what you want. So if there's a dish that you don't really want, then don't eat that one. Mm-hmm. You know, give yourself more of what you do want. And then that's it. That's your meal for the night.
Okay.
And
so this is a circumstance where you're at, like, the party and there's, like, the buffet table. So you're recommending that you get, like, one plate and you go and you pick up how much and what you want, and then the buffet table is no longer, you just stay away from that the rest of the night? Or I guess if you're in step one, you go it back anyway? How does, can you just explain that a little more to me?
Yeah, sure, definitely. Thank you. It's with all meals, even when you're, you know, the buffet at your own dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
And, or just exactly what you said. Because, and the reason why is because, one, you know, I imagine some of you have the experience of going back for seconds, often. And so it's not about denying yourself food. It's what it's about is that feeling that happens when I can't go back for more.
Hmm.
Because emotionally what this translates into is a fear of not having enough.
Right.
So right now it feels like I won't have enough food. What if this isn't enough? What if I'm still hungry? And for me, I experienced a lot of fear around this, and I was like, what's going on? It's just food. I'll have another meal, you know, later. What's going on? And what's going on is you're afraid of not having enough love or enough attention, enough money, security, those types of things. Because you have enough food. Mm. You can put as much on your plate as you want or need. There will be another meal. There's plenty of food
right.
in the house. It's not food that you don't have enough of.
So this is really about starting to look at where you're feeling lack in your life.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And where that comes from with childhood. Mm. And yeah, a lot of my clients will talk about, you know, food is their friend. And it's the only way that they treat themselves, that they get time by themselves, you know, that they have. So there's a lack of comfort or support or love.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you want to go back for more and you have that feeling, instead sit with that feeling. And, you know,
wow.
This is not about food. What is this about?
Mm-hmm.
Where does this familiar?
Mm-hmm. I love that, Anne. Yeah, that's really beautiful. And can you also speak to, because I know one of the things that people might be wondering about and dealing with that I certainly bump up against is I'll get my plate of food, like in a restaurant, you know, I'll order my meal. And we all know, like, restaurant portions these days are just some places they're just really out of control. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the, you know, if it's on your plate, you eat it mentality, right?
Yeah.
The clean your plate mentality, I guess we'll call it. And so,
yeah.
You know, one of the things I've started to do is ask for a to-go box right at the beginning. And
mm-hmm.
I just kick out as much of it as I think, okay, once I have what's
mm-hmm.
left on my plate actually looks like what I want. But I still
mm-hmm.
see that. Like, I still see those moments where it's like, I'm actually kind of full. And this may just go back to your other bit, but I'm feeling a little conflicted between the eat what's on your plate and the stop when you're full if you have a little bit of this clean your plate upbringing or mentality. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're checking in with your body and it's like, okay, I'm full, then absolutely right. Anything that's left over, it's like, okay, I'm going to take that to go. And I love that you gave that example too, because a lot of times I think people forget that you can eat it later.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always tell people the freezer is your friend, you know, I used to freeze cake slices, you know, so that I could pop in the microwave whatever I wanted, a piece of cake.
Nice.
And so it's there later. It's always there for later. So that was great. And if that's something that you have going on, what I would suggest is to always leave something on your plate.
Hmm.
Because that's going to bring up any of those feelings that came from that, or, you know, those triggers. And even if it's a pee, you know, it doesn't have to be a lot. You know, if you're hungry,
yeah.
Eat it. But leave a pee on your plate and see what feelings that triggers. And the great question to ask all the time is, if it's not about food, what is it about? If I'm having a feeling and I think it's about food, it's not about food, okay, what is going on? What am I feeling? Is this familiar?
I love that. I hope everybody got that. Yeah, if it's not about food, what is going on? If it
yeah.
can't be about food, what else could it be? Yeah.
Right.
That's
exactly.
Brilliant. All right, what is step five?
Great. So step five and six are, and seven a little bit, but step five and six are the body image steps. So, you know, body image and food issues just go together. And when you work on your issues with food, it will definitely improve body image. But keep in mind, body image tends to be a bit harder to, you know, like the food stuff comes first. Usually the body image stuff comes later.
Mm-hmm.
Because our culture is so critical discriminatory against body sizes. And so there's a lot of feelings around that. But work on the food issues. That'll help with the body image issue. Because you can imagine, I mean, if you're no longer binging, you're going to feel better about
yeah.
your body.
Yeah.
And there are some things that are really important when treating your body well and feeling good in your body. And the most important thing is to only wear clothes that you love and that fit.
Hmm.
It's so common for women to wear clothes that don't fit, that are, and usually too small.
Hmm.
There's this belief in our culture that if we beat ourselves up enough, we'll want to change. And this couldn't be further from the truth. It doesn't work. So I think that's why women do it. One, you know, there's this feeling like, well, if I need a bigger clothes, then, you know, I'm bad and I'm wrong and sad. And, you know, all those feelings that go with that we
mm-hmm.
talked about. And so they think that, well, if I keep wearing these pair of pants that are too small, then it'll motivate me to lose weight.
Right.
And yeah,
we
and
all
that's
have
not
that
what happens.
Size 6 pair of jeans, right?
Exactly. And somehow, you know, it'll motivate me. But it won't. All it is screaming at you, you're fat. And, you know, I'm sure everybody's experienced this. When you wear a pair of pants that's too tight, how can you not focus on your body and think, oh, my God, I'm so fat. Oh, my gosh, look at my rolls. You know, it's like this running commentary. But the next day, wear a pair of pants that fit, and, you know, you may have some stuff because you've got body image challenges, but a lot of that's going to go away. So I don't want your clothes to be telling you that you're bad or fat or something's wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
as well, when you wear clothes that you love and that fit, you're going to feel good. It kind of reminds me of going to the salon. You know, I go get my hair cut, and the person who cuts my hair, he's great at styling my hair. It always looks good. You know, he's a professional. He can get all the way around my head. And I walk out of there just feeling, like, really beautiful and really great. And so that's the intention here. Put on something you love. Dress up and go to the grocery store. And feel good about what you're wearing. And you don't have to 100%. You know, this is just about, in a way, fake it till you make it. At least give yourself the chance to experience, you know what, I look good. I feel good in what I'm wearing.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you and I had a brief conversation about this, but, and also it feels like such a losing battle, particularly, we've been talking about how men's clothing might have this starting to happen as well, but particularly in women's clothing, sizes change so much from store to store. That if you're relating your self-worth and your value to what size pants you have, it's going to be tough because in this store you're a size 8, in this store you're a size 12. You know, you didn't gain weight walking from one store to the other.
And what I tell people about that, and that's the next step, is to get rid of the clothes or clothes that don't fit or that you don't love and go shopping and find things. And which can be really scary for women, but what's important, and I want all of you to know, is the only reason the size ever matters is so that you can walk into the dressing room with something that's likely to fit. Mm. That's it. It's a way to, you know, it's so that you don't get something that there's no way it's ever going to fit, and why bother putting it on? Your time is more valuable than that. So that's all that matters. And you're right. The clothing, you know, vanity sizing, isn't that what they call it? I don't know. Those are just tricks, and they leave you feeling bad about yourself, but they're just the, you know, fashion tricks to sell. Anyway, so the size doesn't matter. It's not about who you are. What's important only is that you feel good in it, you love it, that it fits. Mm-hmm. And bring a friend with you so that you can get another opinion about it. I had one client, actually. She took a friend shopping, and she'd never had a good experience shopping, so this is really scary for her. But I told her, find a friend that you really like and that you trust and that's kind. And so she did, and they went shopping. She had a great time and even got home, and her friend had to leave early, so her friend said, take pictures and, you know, send me the pictures of what you chose. And so she did. She took pictures of all the outfits, And which brought up some other feelings, which was great. Mm-hmm. She felt those feelings. She had those and really got a very healing experience around this for the very first time in her life. So, and she actually, she bought a bikini, too, for the first time forever.
Yeah,
so it's really great. And then to wear those clothes and show them off, and it's a treat for yourself, and you all deserve that. Mm-hmm. And I promise, no matter what size you are, when you feel great in your body, people are drawn to you, and you look beautiful, and you are beautiful. You know, it's just when we feel bad about ourselves or in our body, that's when, you know, people are not drawn to us.
Yeah, I was going to say the other side of wearing clothes that are too small is sometimes we end up wearing clothes that are just too big. We think we can hide and cover up in that. And so really, you know, I went through this, I think, probably about 2 years ago and really just went through and said, okay, like, how do I want to express? I stopped thinking of clothes as being a representative of my size or my shape, but a way of me expressing my character. And I did a little kind of a vision board for my fashion self, my look. And, you know, there were pictures of Audrey Hepburn, and there was, you know, certain colors and a certain feel. And and what that did for me is, when I went out to the store, I stopped feeling overwhelmed and scared by all the choices and then what size and what shape and all that. And I just started thinking about, like, when I pick up this shirt, does it make me feel or does it express something about me that I want? Yeah. And, my whole wardrobe changed.
Yeah, yes. Yes, okay. And that's what I've heard from my clients. I'm wearing colors, and I haven't worn colors in years. And I went to the store in a, you know, a sleeveless shirt, which I never do. And they feel really good about just caring about what they want rather than afraid of what everybody else is going to think.
I love that.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. So then, step five is wear clothes that fit and you love. And then step six is get rid of those clothes that you don't love or that don't fit. What's step seven?
Step seven is to ditch your scale. Just get rid of it. You don't need to weigh yourself. The doctor doesn't need to weigh you. The scale is only a box of numbers that tells you, at least at this point, how to feel about yourself. And that's all a scale is.
Step. I love this step. At first I was skeptical, and then I've been trying it for like a week. I'm like, you know what? No scale.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put it away, and man, you're so onto something. So tell us more.
Yeah. All the scale is a way to tell you how you feel. It's an evaluation of your self-esteem, and it means nothing. So letting go of that, you know, of course it'll bring up that, mostly I think kind of this fear of being out of control.
Absolutely.
And yeah, and especially when you're doing these steps and you're, you know, a lot of people actually tell me, I know I've gained weight. And I would challenge that. I think the fear of gaining weight is so strong that you're looking for any evidence that it's true. And the scale seems to be the best place to go for that.
Yeah.
But you know that when you get on the scale and you've lost a couple pounds, it's like, woohoo, suddenly I'm good. I'm better. You know, people are going to like me. And you may not be totally conscious of that thought, but that's what's going on.
Right.
Like your self-esteem is.
Accepted.
Yeah, exactly. But then if you get on the scale and you gain weight, then it's like, I'm bad, I'm worthless, you know, I'm failing.
Yeah.
And all it is a number. And it doesn't mean anything about your health either. And I'm not going to talk a lot about that tonight, but I just want to throw it out there. The BMI scale is bogus.
Really? Interesting. Okay.
It's two numbers, your height and your weight. That's supposed to tell you what your health is.
Take into account all sorts of other important factors. Yeah.
Exactly. So I absolutely believe in health at any size, and it's a movement. You can look it up if you're interested, if anybody's interested. But anyway, so your weight is meaningless. Even when you go to the doctor, just say no to being weighed. And most of the time now, I've been doing this for years, and more I don't get any flack for it. Most of the time they're like, okay, no problem.
Wow. Like
yeah, but it is really scary. But it's standing up for, no, this is what is right for me, and I don't need to do what you think. You know, because doctors are authority figures, and so sometimes we tend to do what they say, but everywhere in your life. So this is about empowering yourself to say no.
Yeah. I really love this, Anne. You know, I have always had a kind of a muscular build in some ways. And so I always weigh more than what people think I weigh. And so, you know, you get on a scale and you go, what, how can that be? Like, I don't feel that weight. I don't, like, my body feels good. I feel comfortable. And so then you start punishing and dreading, you know, like dreading that, getting up in the morning or once a week weigh-in and all of that. And I took this one on this past weekend, and it is really amazing when you stop, like, having that digit in your head and you just start noticing, like, how does my body feel today? And, you know, do these clothes feel a little tight? Well, okay, then, you know, either I'm going to ditch them because, like you said, you get rid of the things that don't fit, or it's like, oh, you know what, I can choose some things today that are going to help me kind of regulate. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, as you go along, there may be a time where you, and this is very common, kind of feel like, oh, my gosh, I need to get on the scale. I need to check. And so that's great, because what that tells you is you're feeling uncomfortable or bad about yourself. Somewhere your self-esteem is being challenged. And so what you're trying to do is feel better about that by jumping on the scale. But instead, stay with that feeling. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Got it. All right. So everybody, toss those scales. Throw them out. Okay. Step number eight.
And actually, before we go into step number eight, I actually want to go back to the closed step, because I have an invitation for everybody. And that is, at least one time, you might want to do it more, but at least one time, go out in the world, dress, you know, in something that you feel great in, that you love, that fits, and then go out in the world and feel and act as though, and just take on the feeling of, I am hot. People are looking at me and saying, ooh, girl, you look hot. Just, and fake it till you make it. Just bring that place up where you do feel that way, even if it's a tiny little bit. And what you'll notice is your posture takes on that position. People probably will notice you. And if they do, if anybody looks at you, or just assume that they're looking at you saying, wow, she looks great. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's really great. So I invite all of you to do that. And you might get addicted and want to do it more. I had someone laugh at me saying, oh, my gosh, that'll never happen. But sure enough, she loved it, and she did do it more. And another client, she just did it in her living room first and didn't think she'd ever do it again. But a few days later, found herself in the parking lot, walking up to the store, just going, I'm hot. And anyway, so it's really great. And what it'll show you is that your feeling about yourself it's all about you. Mm. You know, that you can choose to feel great in your body. And it's not always that simple. All those feelings get in the way, too. But try this. I think you'll like it.
I like that. Yeah. And if you're out there listening and you have an experience that you want to share, then please, email that to me or Anne. And we'd love to hear your experiences with that exercise that she's just given you.
Absolutely.
So, good. And speaking of exercise, step number eight.
Yes, so step number eight is about exercise, and of course, exercise is, you know, I believe in health at any size. You can be any size and be healthy. Dieting is not what makes you healthy. Being thin is not what makes you healthy. And studies do show this. Again, I'm not going to get into it. It's a whole other talk, but hopefully you'll just trust me on that, although I know it's different than what you've been told. Anyway, but however, exercise is important for health. And I don't think anybody will refute that. However, you don't need to exercise a lot for it to be healthy. In fact, people that I work with, and my guess is all of you, can relate to either being an over-exerciser or an under-exerciser. And that's because obviously we have this belief in our culture that, you know, you have to exercise to lose weight, or if I eat that, then I have to exercise it off. You know, it's such a common belief. But I really want you to separate those two, because you can eat whatever you want. You're not bad or anything for eating, you know, whatever you want, and you don't have to punish yourself in order to justify it.
Okay.
Exercise is not about getting rid of something. It's about giving to yourself what your body wants and craves and needs. It's about self-care.
Mm-hmm.
Your body wants to exercise. It wants to move. And it doesn't have to be exercise. It can be play and fun, and it should be. In fact, this step is about only doing exercises that you love, that you enjoy, that you want to go and do. So that's really important for this, especially if you're an under-exerciser.
Okay.
Now, the two categories. So if you tend to to over-exercise, you exercise too much, you do it because you need to get rid of what you've eaten, you know, as a punishment, your step in this is to rest, is to not exercise. So if you exercise 5 times a week, take a day off, and instead of exercising, sit on the couch and feel whatever comes up. It'll probably at first sound like a lot of criticism, maybe it's, you'll recognize it as someone's voice, your mom or your dad, or, for example, I had a client whose mom would tell her she had to go for a jog and then follow her in the car as she did
this.
Yeah, so as you can imagine, she doesn't like to exercise now.
No, not really, yeah.
Yeah, so sit on the couch, and as you sit and do nothing, if you're an over-exerciser, you're probably going to have a lot of feelings about that. So feel the feelings. And if you tend to under-exercise, there's a lot of reasons for that. And my guess is, actually, sexual abuse trauma is an element of people who resist exercise. So my guess is that a lot of people listening experience that. So for you, first of all, take as much time as you want not exercising and feel those feelings. But then at some point, you're going to want to exercise because our bodies want to move. And it doesn't matter what you do. All that's important is that you do something, that you walk around the block if that's where you want to start, and then you'll find something that you enjoy. And even if you don't want to, do it anyway. And then let yourself, you know, experience what feelings come up. You know, for this person I mentioned, you know, it was a lot of feeling bad about herself and not good enough. And so, you know, working through that from her mom being so punishing around exercise was really important so that she could get to a place of, I want to do this. I enjoy walking and it's fun for me.
Okay, got it. Yeah, and can you say a little bit more about the connection between under-exercise and sexual abuse, like where that, why that's the case, why people who've been sexually abused tend to under-exercise?
Yeah, definitely. One is exercise, well, let me give you an example, actually, of a client. She was sexually abused as a child, and she overheard a couple of boys, she was fairly young, talking about a fat girl, you know, we wouldn't touch her with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
And that very moment she stopped exercising, she intentionally gained weight. She just didn't want to have any kind of sexual attention at all, and that was her way of solving that. It's also that movement can bring up a lot of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, you know, they're wanting to avoid the feelings that get triggered by the movement.
Right, like really being in your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, got it. Okay, so stop moving if you're moving too much, and get up and move a little if you're not moving at all.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
Got it. All right.
And do what you love, which is really important, because this is about having fun and wanting to do more of it.
Yes.
Not about a punishment.
Good. What's your exercise of love? What do you do?
I love yoga.
Yoga. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mine's dancing.
Yeah. Awesome. Love it. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And it's hard to believe we're here at the end at step 9.
Yay, step 9. Okay, step 9 is my absolute favorite one. This is actually the one that my mentor and friend told me to do that I mentioned at the beginning. You know, do this and eat whatever you want, the two combined. And it's just an incredible step. It's my favorite one. Because what it teaches is boundaries. And if anybody has questions about boundaries at the end, please ask me, because I know, and I'm sure you talk about it a lot too, Rachel, but, you know, boundaries are, they help us to feel safe. Mm-hmm. We know where the line is. We know when it gets crossed. We know when other people cross that line and where it is. It helps us to feel safe. And this step is all about that.
Okay.
It's also about abstinence. So if you're an alcoholic and you decide, I can't do that anymore, it's killing me, and you stop drinking, it's very clear. You are drinking or you're not drinking. But with food, it's a little more challenging, right?
Right,
I have to eat to survive. So people get stuck with this a lot. And actually, I think it's better to be a food addict than an alcoholic, because alcoholics can never drink again if they choose that route. But we can always eat. I can always have a piece of cake. But this step, the way to bring in abstinence is through this step, and that is to eat 3 meals a day and nothing in between.
Okay.
Now, a little caveat, it can be 4, It can be 5, even though I don't necessarily recommend that. It just depends on your body and your metabolism
right.
and your lifestyle. But the important thing is to pick a number and stick with it.
Hmm.
Because what this does is gives you a boundary. This is meal time, and the rest of the time is lifetime. It's feelings time. It's relationships time. It's the stuff that happens when you're not eating. And it also really helps with the, you know, going back to eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full. If you eat 3 meals a day and you take care of your, you know, hunger needs, then you're going to, you know, in other words, you eat enough protein to last for, you know, 4 or 5 hours. Then you're going to be hungry again when it's time to eat.
Got it. Okay. So it's so now I know people with like busy lifestyles and things that are going on, it's really can be really challenging to have like, okay, this is my meal time every kind of a, every day. So is it about eating at a particular time every day, or is it more about, well, even if I have lunch at 3 o'clock, that's my lunch, and then I have my dinner, and maybe dinner's at, you know, 7 o'clock sometimes, maybe it's at 8, maybe it's at 9. But really just being very conscious about the number of meals that you're having.
Exactly. And it is about planning, and it's about taking care of your needs and, you know, what works in your life. And really, and so at first, people really kind of plan for this. It's like, okay, I'm hungry, you know, at 8 in the morning, so I'm going to eat breakfast then. And then I go to work, and my lunch is at noon, so I'm going to eat enough at breakfast so that I'm hungry at noon. And then, you know, dinner is usually around, you know, 6 o'clock. And so they kind of think about it and plan for it. And a lot of that is because it's scary to do this. Like, well, what if I don't eat enough? And people do tend to eat too much at first until and the planning
right.
is just about learning, too. It's not about being critical. Oh, I blew it. It's just about, okay, it's, you know, paying attention and learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, that didn't work. What can I do differently the next day?
Okay.
So
it's really about cutting out that in-between meals, kind of grazing, snacking kind of
yes.
stuff. Okay.
Yes.
Well,
which
you
is
can
often emotional eating.
Right. It's not even really about being hungry. But if you're
right.
somebody, for whatever reason, because your blood sugar levels, you really need to kind of have food a little bit more often throughout your day, you just decide that. You say, okay, I'm going to have, you know, 4 meals, and that's my number,
right.
and that's what I'm going to
yeah.
do. And then you stay committed to that and notice, okay, when it's not that time, this is a no food. I love that. This is a life relationship being time. I love that. When it's not food time, it's life and relationships and being time. That was
yeah.
great.
Exactly.
Okay.
It becomes really clear. It's like, okay,
yeah.
I'm wanting this food, but I know I'm not hungry. What's bothering me?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And it's also saving, you know, food. Like someone at work brings in donuts and you really want a donut, but it's not your mealtime. Grab a donut and set it, you know, somewhere where you can have it with lunch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's a way to take care of yourself and your needs, but also having a boundary around it.
Okay.
So
yeah, and you know, one of the things that I think is so key in that, I'm sure you run into this working with your clients as I do with mine, is really it's learning to be able to trust yourself. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Being able to know that when you say, this is what I'm going to do, this is where my line is, that you can follow through with that. And how that really helps to build that confidence. And again, going back to that choice that, you know, it's really about what you want to be choosing.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
So now I understand you've created a program that covers all of these steps in more depth and, you know, will support someone as they are kind of going through this process of trying to implement, make their way and go through their journey. Can you tell us a little bit more about how people can get access to that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do have a program that goes over all of these steps. But what I really want to do right now is talk about a slightly different program that will really help in a big way and get people started. So First of all, I just want to say these steps absolutely work. I've been using them with clients for a long time, and people get a lot out of them, as you can imagine, and I imagine some of you are really feeling that. They can, and some of them are going to be easy. You know, if you choose right now today to take one of these on, you know, it really could be easy for you, and it could be hard too. And all that does is tell you that the emotions going on underneath are a little bit more challenging if it's hard. But they absolutely work, and they help you get to the feelings. But the feelings part is the thing that I find is the most difficult for people, and that's only because we're taught not to feel our feelings. And that's why when you do the emotional and the underlying stuff and learn to have, you know, to cry when you're sad and that's okay, it makes a world of difference. In fact, you don't need food as a way to cope. You don't need food as a way to distract you from what's going on. And that's also where happiness comes from, because when you push down your feelings, you can't just push down anger and hurt and sadness. You push down happiness as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you start to let those up, then you start to really experience joy and love and happiness. Anyway, so, but the feelings are a little bit challenging. So a lot of what I want to do is help people with that element of it. And these steps are a way to help you do that. So tonight, what I'd really like to do is tell all of you about a brand new program that I have that I'm really excited about that will help you with that first step in a big way. It's that first step, Eat What You Want, is so helpful and so important, because if you don't do that, it can really sabotage everything else that you're doing. And it's such a great feeling to stop that cycle of binging. You know, when my clients say, I'm not binging nearly as much as I used to, or not at all, or only every once in a while, they feel so good. I mean, it's really empowering to get that. And it'll also make some of the other steps easier to do. So I really want to support everybody in that, and I'm making a long story, or a short story long, maybe. So if you're interested in that and you want to get help with this and you know, springboard, you know, at another time later, I will offer a program that covers all these steps. And you guys are on my mailing list. You'll hear about it. And I'd love to have you join. But for now, what I'd like to do is offer this first step. It's a self-study course. It goes over 4 weeks. Not only do I go over the step in detail and tell you everything you need to know to do it, but also I go over any of the common challenges that people have and how to do the emotional piece, which is really big, and how to change your thought patterns around this as well. So what I'd love to do is offer this at 50% off. It's normally $97. I want to give it to you guys for $47. And with it, I also want to offer a free consultation with me. So at the end of the program, or even in the middle, if you want some support, we can talk. What I'd love is to get your feedback about the program, because that'll help me a lot. But also to talk to you about how it's helped you, you know, the changes that you've made, as well as what might be next for you and what support you might want more, if it's, you know, more help with the rest of the steps or so on. Mm-hmm. So that will come with it. So if that is interesting to you, if you want to learn more about that, you can find it on my website, and that is foodisnottheenemy.com. So foodisnottheenemy.com. And then / Battle of the Binge with, what are they called? Dashes in between the words. So battle-of-the-binge. So that's okay. The name of the program, Battle of the Binge.
Wow. So if you're listening right now and you know that you need this step, you need to let go of thinking of food as good and bad, you know, take Ann up on this. That is an amazing offer. And thank you so much for giving that to my community. It's such a gift. And you'll be also sending this out in the follow-up email, as far as you'll send out the recording of this call, but also a link, so that if they didn't catch any of that, they'll be able to click on that right away to go over and sign up for this self-study course.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I'll send that with it and the recording to this call, so you guys can listen anytime and get help with all this.
Okay.
And also, just so you know, the 50% off, I'm going to hold that until the end of the month. And if you have any questions about it or want to talk to me about it, feel free to reach out to me. I'd love to talk to you.
Right. Okay. So, 50% off until July 31st. And not only are they getting the self-led study, they're also getting a consultation with you when they're feeling stuck, when they're in that, they've been processing and doing the work, and maybe they've reached a point where they're hitting up against something. They can get some one-on-one coaching from you around that. Okay. That's amazing. Well, Anne, this has been really, really, really helpful, and I'm excited to turn it over to some of the participants and see if we have any questions. So can you explain a little bit how we're going to do the question and answer time?
Yes. Actually, and my phone is running out of battery, so I'm going to turn Q&A mode on and hopefully not get disconnected before I plug it in. So let me go ahead and turn that on. Okay, so if you have a question, anything, just press *6. Isn't that what it is, Rachel, while I go plug in my phone?
Oh, goodness. Now, what did we decide earlier? I think we decided it was *2. I think *6 unmutes them when we're in the listening mode. I guess we can try it both ways. So if you have a question that you'd like Anne to answer, go ahead and press *2, and we'll see if that pops up for her, that someone has raised their hand.
Yes, I have control. Okay, there might be a little static. My phone's in the other room. I apologize.
It's okay.
Okay, so let me make sure. Yeah, it is actually *6.
Okay, okay. So if
let me see. I wonder if someone could.
Let's see. No, I can't do it because I'm in as a host. Well, maybe if someone listening just wants to give it a go for us, even if you don't have a question, you can just come on and say hi. Anyone who's listening, if you wouldn't mind just pressing *6, I think is what we're going to try and see if that does anything for us.
Okay. I don't see anybody. Let me try one thing just to make sure it's not me doing it. No. Okay, that should work. So it should work. If anybody has a question, press *6. I'd be glad to answer anything or, help you in any way that I can.
So while people are working up their courage to ask their questions, what are some of the maybe you can tell us about an experience you had with a client that kind of illustrates one of these steps and, one of the roadblocks that came up for him or her and how you worked and helped them through that?
Mm-hmm. I think the first step, eat what you want, is definitely one of the more challenging steps because there's that fear of weight is so strong and understandable. So one thing that I do with clients, if it just feels too hard to do the whole thing all at once, to eat whatever you want anytime or all those foods, is just to pick one food. So, for example, I had a client, really not wanting to eat whatever, any foods. And so it's like, okay, what's one of your favorite foods that you want to try this with? And so for her, it was peanut butter. And so I said, go out and buy, how many jars of peanut butter do you think you could eat in a week? And, and she was like, I don't know, 5. And so I said, okay, go out and get 6 jars, because if you run out, I want you to make sure you still have some. and eat it whenever you want it and as many times as you want it and for as long as you want it. And it was really scary. We talked about what, you know, feelings, the feelings that would come up and how to work with that. And so she did it. She bought 6 jars of her favorite peanut butter, and it's got to be the favorite. And she ate it a lot the first couple of days, I think 3 days. And then by the 4th day, now my phone is, my headset is dying. Anyway, she ate the peanut butter for, by the 4th day, she started feeling like, I don't really want this. Mm-hmm. But she wasn't too sure, so she ate it again anyway. And then by, I think, the 5th day,
oh, she's leaving us with a cliffhanger. Well, I'm going to guess that Anne's just having a little trouble there with her technology. So I apologize to the listeners, but I'm guessing where she's going in that story is that by the 5th day, the client had probably decided that eating peanut butter every day was not as much fun as it has originally sounded. And as a peanut butter lover, I think I might try that. I might give it a go. So, okay, so what we're going to do here is we have about 9 minutes left here on our time together, so we're just going to hang out and
back.
To come back.
So sorry about that. Anyway, so I'm guessing I cut out at around by the 5th day.
Yes, you did. I kind of filled in what I thought the end of the story would be, but yeah, give us the end of the story there.
Okay, I'm sure you got it right. She didn't want it, and from that point on, she ate peanut butter only when she wanted it. It was rare, and she kept, you know, a jar in her house, because that's the other thing. I feel so sad when people talk about how I don't keep food in the house that I might eat.
Right.
And with this program, you can, I mean, by the end of doing these steps, you can have whatever you want in your house and not feel compelled to eat it. Unless you really want it. Mm-hmm. I've had chocolate in my house for over a year. It's just,
wow.
It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of freedom that I want for every woman, because you're not bad or good based on what you eat.
Mm. I love that. Okay, well, so anything else you want us to know about how people can reach you or how they can get set up with the program? Just a reminder, the website is foodisnottheenemy.com, and Anna's going to be emailing out the link for the recording of this call, and also to be able to sign up for her 4-week self-led study at the amazing price of $47. That also includes a one-to-one session with Anne. And so be on the lookout for that. If for whatever reason you don't get that, you guys can reach me at coach@rachelgrantcoaching.com, and I'll be happy to connect you with Anne. But anything else you want us to just know, as we, you know, we've gotten so much great information and really feeling encouraged, I think, that it's possible to really move past these, you know, these beliefs and the burden and the judgment. But what would you like all of our listeners today to really walk away with?
That it's possible, I think, mm-hmm. That's the main thing. There's, if you're struggling with this and you want a way out, it's totally possible. I want you to have hope, and it's may not be an easy process necessarily, although I'm totally open for it to be one, but it will make a huge impact on your life. And I know that myself, and I've experienced that with a number of people, and it's just really freeing. So I just, there's hope, and if I can help you in any way, I'd love to. It's my passion, and I just, you know, I want women to feel good about themselves and feel free to be who they are. So if I can help with that, I'm here.
Wonderful.
And you can easily reach me by replying to any of the emails that I send out. Those will go directly to me, and I will respond.
Awesome. Well, should we give one last call for questions? Just in case.
Yeah, and if you have a question that you're afraid to raise your hand, you don't have to say your name. But I understand. I get so nervous on these things, asking questions.
Yeah.
And so I totally get that. I'll be very gentle. And if you don't have a question, that's fine too. And
yeah.
You can always email me later if you don't want to.
Okay. So they can, if they have questions, they can send you an email and you'll be happy to answer it that way. Okay. Got it. So do we decide it was star 6 for sure, or do we want to try star 2 just in case?
If you have a question you want, and star 6 isn't working for you, actually, you know what? There aren't too many people here. I could just unmute people and just see.
Okay. Let's do that. Just in case something on the technology, in case there are people out there with burning questions and the thing that's getting in the way is technology. So, yeah, why don't we
that would be terrible.
Turn off the Q&A and go back to the lecture and just unmute everybody. Even if they just want to say thank you, that's always welcome as well.
Okay. Okay, so if you want to say something, then you're all off mute now.
Okay.
If you have a question or a comment or anything.
I would like to say thank you. This has been really enjoyable. My name is Lisa.
Great. Lisa, I'm so glad. Yay, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Cool.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Okay. Then I guess we'll say goodbye. Thank you
okay.
so much, Rachel, and everybody. I really, really enjoyed this talk, and I'm really glad it was helpful for you, Lisa, and I hope for everybody. And feel free to reach out to me if you want.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing your evening with us, Anne, and I hope that, you guys will, again, take advantage of this opportunity to connect with Anne and to do this work. It's really great. So if you have any questions, reach out to us, give us a call, and keep an eye out for the email, the follow-up email from Anne. Good night, everybody.
Good night.